Morning Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 8:11 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Julio Diaz is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, heard here on Saturdays on News Radio at 4, and then also the founder and host of the Pensacola Movie Club, where they watch movies and get together and talk about them. Although, didn't get to watch one last night and talk about it because he's not here. He is in San Diego, I think, at Comic-Con. Julio, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
How's the event? Pretty good?
Oh, yeah, you know, this is only the biggest nerd gathering on the planet, so, you know.
It's all your people, all in one place. Of course, Julio does all kinds of work for Pensacon, and, you know, this is part of his duties. That's fantastic. I can't believe it. I didn't intend to make that joke. But speaking of, the movie of the week is Fantastic Four First Steps. This is the third try at a Fantastic Four movie? Fourth try?
Technically, it's... So we had, first of all, there was a movie made in the 1990s by Roger Corman's studio.
Oh.
That was basically made, it was never released. It was made to hold on to the rights. And like the folks that were in it, including our friend Alex Hyde White, who's been a frequent Pensacon guest and lives right in the Pensacola area with us, was Mr. Fantastic in that movie.
Oh, okay.
But it was, the folks that were in it believed that, hey, you know, we're going to be these guys. And then they found out that they'd been duped and the movie was made to not be released and just to hold on to the rights to the property. There's a whole documentary about that. You can find the film as a bootleg, but it's never been officially released. So that was the first attempt.
Okay.
The second attempt was the version, I guess about 15 years ago, maybe, with Ewan Gruffudd and Jessica Alba and Michael Chiklis and a young actor named Chris Evans before he was known as Captain America, played the Human Torch in that version. Directed by Tim Story, and that one was successful enough that they made a sequel to it. Rise of the Silver Surfer was the second one.
Uh-huh.
And then they decided, well, no, we're going to go this other route, and they made this version with Miles Teller and Kate Mara, and I can't even tell you who else was in that one, but it was so bad that, like, people just like to pretend it doesn't exist, basically. Then we had this thing where the Fox studio sold itself to Disney, which brought the rights back to Marvel, and
right.
Marvel gets to finally have the version of, you know, kind of the original Marvel property. The Fantastic Four is what really kicked off the Marvel universe, finally in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
All right, so it's Wave 4 Fantastic Four filmdom. And is it good?
Appears to be that fourth time is the charm. The reviews are very good on this. I've actually talked to a couple of friends who saw it last night who are among the hardest critics I know of film in general and superhero films in particular. They haven't liked anything in forever. And they both said this is one of the best superhero films they've seen.
Okay,
so
well, that's great.
That in and of itself, if you know the folks that I'm talking about, my friends Phil Bailey and Jason, they don't like anything.
So the people who normally say no, no, awful are saying not just yes, but hell yes. So that's good.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But in general, you know, the tenor of the reviews across the board is it's the best thing Marvel's done in a long time.
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah. Outstanding. So, I mean, I always loved Fantastic Four, loved Silver Surfer, loved all of it. So eager to see it be good. What are you guys going to watch next week when you get back to town?
Not sure yet, because we've been a little busy, but as soon as we figure that out, it'll be up in our Facebook group.
Outstanding. Julio Diaz, again, hosts Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock on Saturdays, and also the Pensacola Movie Club. Follow them on Facebook, and he is scouting and enjoying himself at Comic-Con. Julio, as always, thanks for the time, sir. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, thanks, Andrew.
You bet. 8:15 on News Radio 92.3. Why is Mercedes in the Transgressors Memorial Service? Find out next. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. But if you're on I-10 westbound between I-110 and Highway 29, you're going to see maybe a 7 to 9 minute construction delay there. But other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. It's hot in the summer, but you can bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This week, Mass Confusion takes the stage with classic rock, Motown, smooth jazz, funk, country, and oldies all in their own style. Come out and take a spin on the dance floor at Bands on the Beach, brought to you by the Santa Rosa Island Authority. This week, don't miss the Gulfside Market.
Each Sunday at 7:30 a.m., the Bible Baptist Bookstore of Pensacola, Florida, brings you Theological Seminar with teacher Peter S. Ruckman, founder and president of the Pensacola Bible Institute. He will teach you what the Bible says about the subject, not merely what it is presumed to teach.
Tune in this Sunday at 7:30 a.m. for Theological Seminar with Dr. Peter S. Ruckman, brought to you by Bible Baptist Bookstore on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Get the midday news live with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, 11 to 2, before Guy Benson on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the Washington Commanders. And in this instance, it really is a sad day of remembrance because, as you all know, President, we still can't believe he got elected again, has said he will use his leverage to coerce the Commanders to revert to their former name in order to secure a stadium deal in the District of Columbia. He even derisively called them the Washington Whatevers, as if it's beneath him to honor them with their actual name. And although we'd like to think the team will resist this pressure, it's been our tragic experience that whatever What's-His-Name wants, What's-His-Name gets. So we are resigned in advance to having to watch the Washington R-Skins, we obviously aren't going to say that horrible racial slur that rhymes with bedskins, playing football on Sunday. And yes, even though a 90% super-duper majority of indigenous people surveyed consistently said they were not offended by the name Rouge Skins, everything's less offensive when you say it in French, this does not matter. The sixth rule of wokeness clearly tells us that only the wounds of the offended matter, even if the wounded are a minority of the minority being wounded. So if 10% are incensed, that's the key fact. The hurtfulness of the handful or even the single aggrieved one always matters more than the indifference of the masses. That's literally why we call it being woke, because it doesn't happen to everybody. Only the few special, privileged insiders are hypersensitive enough to have had the epiphany of race, gender, and sexuality awareness enhancement that our order depends on. Now, yes, it's true. We don't really love the name Commanders either, since it obviously implies a superior-inferior relationship or hierarchical power structure where one person is issuing commands and another person is obeying them. We, of course, believe in communal, collective, consensus-based decision-making, or what we like to call the triple C structure of golden government based on mutual love, respect, and gentle caressing. But still, Commanders is so much better than calling them the Washington Purple without the Blueskins. One other note. Since we're talking about this, President Whatever has also said he wants baseball's Cleveland Guardians to change their team name back to the I-Blankians. In fact, his favorite pastime appears to be ripping off the cosmetic labeling of wokeism and reverting names to their former inglory, whether it's mountains or military bases or professional sports teams. Also, we don't know whether he intends to resurrect that horrific, grinning, red-faced caricature Chief Wahoo as well, but we can only assume that goes with the package, and calling them the Cleveland Otherwordians will certainly bring many ignominies with it, Mr. President. I stands for indigenous peoples, not that other term. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we received truly sad news this week that one of our very most favorite thought leaders, Stephen Colbert, has lost his job telling America what to think on CBS's Late Show.
Before we start the show, I want to let you know something that I found out just last night. Next year will be our last season. The network will be ending The Late Show in May. And
yes, I know it's depressing for us to find this out so suddenly when we have a mere 10 months left to grieve the loss of our hero, the man whose audience share was the highest in his time slot and 50% better than Jimmy Kimmel's. but it gets worse.
It's not just the end of our show, but it's the end of The Late Show on CBS. I'm not being replaced. This is all just going away.
So not only are we losing our beloved Captain Anti-America, but CBS isn't even going to be producing a talk show in that time anymore. They're essentially abandoning the slot to something else, the nature of which we can't even speculate upon at this point. But rest assured, it won't be the reliable propagator of sturdy anti-republicanism that it is now, for shame. Now, yes, it's true, the show costs about $100 million a year to make, employing 200 people, but losing $40 million a year. But $40 million is a small price to pay for saving America from the forces of MAGA, isn't it? Does this mean we can no longer depend on the financially self-destructive but politically reliable support of one of our big four broadcast networks? How can we be competitive in next year's midterms if the unified front of broadcast television starts to crumble? And yes, although we do cherish our dear Stephen, it does trouble us no small amount to realize that he apparently did not offer up any of his own $15 million salary to save the show. It certainly is nice of him to lament the loss of 200 jobs, but he would have been a better comrade if he had reduced his own salary to a still lavish, say, $1 million to offset the losses and perhaps rescue his fellow members of the proletariat from their occupational doom. And yes, we know some of our enemies will seize on this fact as evidence that socialists are never really serious about their commitment to equality. But to this, we simply refer you to the approved 47th edition of Rules for Socialists 25B subsection 15. All economic rules apply only to the ordinary folk, and never to the leaders who make the financial dreams of those folk come true. So now we will be left with only one champion at night, Jimmy Kimmel, plus once a week Jon Stewart on Comedy Central, and all the network news, and CNN, and MSNBC, and the newspapers, and the universities, and the musicians, and the filmmakers, and the tech companies, and the unions. Well, still, we hate to lose even one of our most cherished apostles. We certainly hope he's not the coal bear in the coal mine. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we are so happy to award this week's holy and anointed garland of rainbow equality to the fine engineers at Mercedes-Benz for the pioneering work on their next-generation electric sports car, the C590. Now, obviously, we love the fact that the upper levels of race car enthusiasm are finally being conquered by electric motors. But that's not the real reason we love this car so much. You see, the key distinguishing feature of the C590 isn't its high-performance, no-combustion engine. It's the advanced external speaker system that make it sound like a Mercedes V8 engine. That's right. Realizing that speed freaks raised to love their planet-killing, gas-guzzling, rumble-inducing sports cars would only be enticed away by something that sounded like speed, Mercedes has given them what they want. And why not? This is no different than making plant-based imitation meat bean curd patties look and taste like actual hamburgers, or pummeling and shaping flax and chia seeds to seem like eggs, or using LEDs instead of, you know, actual light bulbs. In fact, although this has not been engineered yet, we look forward to a future where drivers can select different sounds and feel depending on their mood for the day or the moment. There's no reason any car has to have just one sound. Why not let the C590 switch between sounding like the old Mercedes AMG GT, the AMG C63, or the AMG W204 as you desire, perhaps even emulating the distinctive noise of other manufacturers entirely? If engine revving is going to be fake, why not let it be that of a Ferrari or a Porsche or a Lamborghini or even an F1? The possibilities are theoretically endless. But other than the novelty and fun, do you not see, dear Utherin, why this is such a beautiful innovation? It means that yet another class of things has shed the burden of being binary. This means that the future of Mercedes and perhaps all cars is trans-propulsional. This goes way beyond the awkward half-breed hybrids like the Toyota Prius or the Ford Fusion. No! We finally have truly trans-engineal vehicles, or TEVs for short. No longer must a sports car be limited to its locomotion assigned at birth. Finally, vehicles manufactured electric can identify as internal combustion. The C590 has innards without pistons and spark plugs, but now it can sound like a turbo diesel because it identifies as a V8. And if sports cars can be trans, in fact, if the entire line of Mercedes can be trans AMGs, then anything goes. And what could be more inclusive than an EV on the inside pretending to be a muscle car on the outside, even sounding like the complicated tranny that it doesn't even have? So beautiful. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
8:25 on News Radio 92.3. So I really think I'm honest. I wish I could patent the idea.
Because the
idea of, you know, because I know like my kids who play the racing games and switching between the cars and planes and all the, you know, they love knowing the details and having the authentic feel and sound and all like Gran Turismo kind of stuff. All of that, it's only a matter of time before you can select a Mercedes, select a Ferrari, select a Lamborghini on your car or even different. I mean, you can computer program any different sound. Why not make it sound like, you know, your EV, you know, even your little sedan could be theoretically made to sound like a Jeep or a Corvette or, and why not? Or, you know,
right.
And an old Mustang. I mean, anyway, so
those exhaust notes are going to sound good.
That's coming. You got to know that's coming. It just hasn't quite arrived yet.
It has to.
John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Let's see here. Where if you're on I-10 westbound between I-110 and Highway 29, expect about a 7 to 9 minute delay just due to construction through that area. No accidents to report to you, but other than that, we are good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
It's an ingenious idea, though. Switching the sounds on your cars?
Everybody, I love it.
People would buy that in a heartbeat.
I would.
Absolutely.
I know for sure.
That'd be so... I mean, honestly, I'm not big into the EVs. I have all my questions and limitations, but that might entice me. You know, like the ability to make your car have all these different cool sounds would be interesting to me.
I want my car to sound like a bicycle with playing cards in the spokes.
Ring, ring, ring.
President Trump has signed an executive order aimed at removing homeless people from the streets. The order signed yesterday asks Attorney General Pam Bondi to reverse judicial precedents that limit state and local government's ability to have individuals on the streets committed if they pose a risk to themselves or others.
This EV, there's a lot in this EV. There's a lot of stuff in this. I read it yesterday and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how much of this is actually going to get implemented, but there's an enormous amount of direction and guidance in this thing about what to do with the homeless in America.
Absolutely.
Including, by the way, evaluating funding to make sure that it's actually solving the problems and is not creating more dependency, which makes sense. You know, I'm sure the critics would say that you're going to basically wind up driving people into drug abuse in the process of forcing them through this, but it's designed to help get them help. At least that's how I read it in part. Anyway, go ahead, David.
So the woman that was seen on the Kiss Cam at the Coldplay concert with the CEO of Astronomer has now resigned. Kristen Cabot, I believe is her name.
Cabot, I think.
Okay. Well, one of those two. she stepped down from her job yesterday as the head of HR at that company. CEO Andy Byron already resigned. And a new species of ancient shark has been discovered in a cave in Kentucky. The National Park Service says fossils were found recently at Mammoth Cave National Park, which date back 340 million years to a time when that cave was submerged in a warm sea that was teeming with aquatic life. Scientists say the newly discovered species was less than a foot in length and notable for its curved row of teeth designed for crushing small sea creatures.
Well, that's terrifying. I mean, I know it's small, but then I start to think about a piranha is small.
Small piranha
bad, right?
Sharks, yeah.
All right,
in
David.
In Kentucky.
There you go, in Kentucky, in Great Mammoth Caves. David, thank you so much for the update. 8:29, News Radio 92.3. Speaking of executive orders Trump has issued, there's another one that he issued. And I will confess, I don't fully understand the implications of this one, but how it's related to gambling, related to college sports funding. And it's designed to block college athletes from getting third-party funding that doesn't come through the university and is not specifically like fee-for-service when they allow their image or name to be used in something. It seems like a big deal because what the EO laments is the ruination of modern college athletics with all the money that's slopping around in it right now. And, you know, people are winning their lawsuits every time they try to create a legislation that limits, restricts, creates a kind of a appropriately tailored program for compensating college athletes. Somebody comes in and sues over the part of it that's meant to be the limitation, and then he eliminated it. And so it's kind of a wild west right now, and the effort Trump says in the EO that is to try to save college sports from, you know, the weight of its own financial incompetence around this whole subject. And I don't feel like I have a great grasp on the details here, but if he's right about the danger, I'm glad they're trying to do something. Whether this is the solution or whether it's even enforceable or not kind of remains to be seen.
I'm Therese Crowley. President Trump riding off to Scotland on Air Force One to visit his golf clubs, hosting Scotland's First Minister and Britain's Prime Minister on the links on the way, saying there's a 50-50 chance of an EU trade deal. After a hard-hat visit with a Federal Reserve chair criticizing the cost of the Fed renovation, but saying he expects Fed Chair Jerome Powell to do the right thing and bring down interest rates.
The one thing we have to do is get housing prices down and the interest rates down so people can buy the house, because they're all making money, but they can't get the interest rate down. We have to.
Every point costs the U.S. $365 billion. A second day break from prison for Jeffrey Epstein's partner in sex crimes, Ghislaine Maxwell, answering questions from Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche at the Tallahassee courthouse. Day two about possible co-conspirators. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. It is 80 degrees right now. We've got cloudy skies here in Pensacola. Right now we've got 80 degrees. Looks like Governor Ron DeSantis is speaking live right now.
Even we're going to go ahead and go to that. That would have made things like Alligator Alcatraz and Operation Vigilant Sentry illegal in the state of Florida. Of course, I vetoed that. Blaise Angolia was in the Senate there, and he was very much standing on the side of the voters that sent us here, and he opposed that sanctuary bill. We ended up getting good legislation passed that requires all state and local agencies in Florida to participate in immigration enforcement efforts. And so that really began in earnest months ago, and it was had a lot of success. But the one thing that we were running into was that DHS just did not have capacity to be able to hold and process these illegal aliens prior to deportation. Our sheriffs were using some of their local facilities. We would do what we could at the state level, but there was a huge need for additional capacity. And obviously they had a rough 4 years under Biden, really letting the agency wilt in ways that it was never intended to do. So we were asked, hey, if there's any way you can help with this, this is what you want to do. So the site here at the Dade Collier Airport in the heart of South Florida was a unique opportunity, because while it was an existing footprint with a massive runway, it was something that was not necessarily full or being used all the time. And so we were able to, under Kevin Guthrie's leadership, within record time, create a facility that could support intaking, processing, and eventually deporting these illegal aliens. And that's important to deport from Florida, but obviously from the United States as well. So we have capacity now for a couple thousand. We can expand that as demand is there. We're looking forward to being able to do that. I know that the administration has called on other states to follow suit and expand this type of capacity. And I would just reiterate that call. I think it's important. I think it'll make a difference. And so we're here today to say, you know, this was never intended to be something where people are just held and we just kind of twiddle our thumbs. The whole purpose is to make this be a place that can facilitate increased frequency and numbers of deportations of illegal aliens. And that is the goal. And one of the reasons why this was a sensible spot is because you have this runway that's right here. You don't have to drive them an hour to an airport. You go a couple thousand feet and they can be on a plane and out of here. So I'm pleased to report that those flights out of Alligator Alcatraz by DHS have begun. The cadence is increasing. We've already had a number of flights in the last few days. We've had hundreds of illegals have been removed from here. And, you know, the federal government has a
a process of how they eventually do, and they've done it different ways on some of these different flights. But the reality is this provides an ability to enhance the mission to increase the number and frequency of deportations. And so what's been done here has really been a remarkable. There's full ground air.
And 8:35 at News Radio 92.3, live from Alligator Alcatraz, Governor Ron DeSantis this morning giving an update on that facility, its capacity, possible expansion, and announcing that flights have begun directly deporting illegal immigrants from the state of Florida. We'll be following that here in the newsroom and have more in just a few minutes. Taking a quick look at our local headlines, UWF has added a new position to President Manny Diaz's administration, the Vice President of Strategic Initiatives. That was approved by UWF's Board of Trustees at a $180,000 salary. Dr. Clifford Humphrey filling that position. And Florida's wildlife experts deploying robotic rabbits in the Everglades to lure Burmese pythons. The robo bunnies are equipped with heat signatures and scents to help trap the invasive snakes.
Snakes use a lot of different senses to decide what is and what isn't prey. And it depends on how much they're able to actually replicate a real rabbit in these robots.
That is Zoo Miami's Ron McGill. The remote control rabbits are also equipped with cameras. They were created by researchers at the University of Florida. 8:36, let's get a check on our forecast.
We do have some scattered showers and thunderstorms possible today. 70% chance of rain, high near 88 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 77. For Saturday, 50% chance of rain, high near 89. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 77 degrees. Going into Sunday, 20% chance of rain, mostly sunny skies, high near 92. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
It's 83 and cloudy. Let's get a look just a minute or two late here at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right, brought to you by EC. CUA Bulkway Services now call for pickup. Call by 2 p.m. the day before your service day. You can learn more at ecua.fl.gov. Still rolling accident-free right now. Just seeing some delays if you are on I-10 westbound between I-110 and Highway 29. You will see some delays, about a 5 to 7 minute delay through that construction zone. But other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Again, we've got 83 cloudy skies. Your next news in 30 minutes and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. And your money now. Quick check on our markets here at the opening bell. The Dow's up 92 points at 44,786. S&P up 8.5 points at 63.71. NASDAQ down 15 points at 21.43. 10-year bond rate up 4.41%. Gold price is down 29.60 at 33.43.90. Silver down 17 cents at 39.05. Bitcoin down just over 3,000 today at 116,147. Our next news in 30 minutes. We've got breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
Hey, Pensacola. Get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are the dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola. 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Said a hip hop, the hip hip hop, you don't stop. Rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
We're here with Admiral Jeff Jericho, who is leaving NETSI, but we're not quite sure going where. Yeah, so great to have you for a couple of years. A little shorter tour than we're normally used to. And your next assignment isn't set yet, right? Or is it set?
It's not announced.
Okay.
So we're just waiting on the administration to do the process. And,
okay.
And if an announcement comes and the Senate agrees, then I'll go to that job.
Remember when this happened, remember we speculated kind of what this could mean if it needs Senate confirmation when Cherico was leaving us here and going to Limbo Land as he had left his post at NetSea, which is unusual because usually the two stars go there to retire.
Correct.
And he went there and was only 2 years, not 3 years. And, you know, what did that mean exactly? It's the wrap, by the way. I have Butch and Lee Hansen, both of whom are retired captains in the Navy, and, you know, one of whom flew planes. That's the female, yes. Lee. And also the other one who drove subs. That's the male, Butch.
Absolutely.
Every time I watch,
there's no question.
Exactly. Every time I watch, like I've been watching sub movies lately. Every time I'm watching movies, I always think about what would Butch think of this, or what would Lee think of that. So, by the way, welcome back, both of you. Great to have you.
Great to be here.
So this is a pretty big deal, Chief of Naval Personnel, right, for Cherico?
Yes, and I think in keeping with a lot of the appointments that this president's making, with people that not the normal experience or background and putting in jobs to maybe shake things up.
Because he's, Caesar's not worked in that slice of Navy.
Right, hasn't worked.
What does the Office of Naval Personnel do?
They're in charge of all the recruiting, all the
huge
career
HR
planning.
Guy.
The
HR guy for the entire Navy, 350,000.
Well, I mean, part of what he did as NetSea was recruiting, right? Isn't recruiting under NetSea? So didn't he handle at least that slice of things, and that was a big win for him? Do I remember this right?
It may be. It wasn't when we were in. If it is now.
Things do change. Yeah, correct. Maybe. Okay.
Because it's a two-star that runs recruiting also, so.
Okay.
I don't know that. Maybe they're under NetSea now. But.
And for a Chief Naval Personnel, this will be a three-star position, right? So he'll pick up his star when you get Senate confirmation,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, nobody coming out of NetSea's picked up a third star in a long time.
Yeah.
Well, at one point, it was a three-star job.
So I think to me, this is a big deal. I feel like these are our people, you know? Yeah. They're like, they're our team members, and when they go on to do other things, I kind of celebrate that. Lee, any thoughts about all this? Or
again, I think it's an unusual method to get to that position.
Okay.
And I think there's a lot of doing things differently that's happening now. You mentioned about the Naval Academy and some of the changes there. We're going to have our first... Marine Corps,
right? Yeah.
First ever.
And at first you look and you say they got rid of the first female commandant, right? Mm-hmm. But she got moved to somewhere else. She didn't get, removed or anything.
And generally that's a three and retire.
Okay. You know? So that's another one where they're kind of using her elsewhere. But now they brought in for the first time a Marine that's going to be the Academy superintendent, right? Or whatever. What's the term?
The superintendent.
Superintendent, okay.
Yeah, the commandant is a senior 06 that usually gets promoted out of that job. But no, it's a three-star job that's generally you're going to go there for 3 years and retire because they don't want that person politicking for a four-star.
Okay.
In this case, though, they've moved the former soon-to-be former superintendent to another big job on the Navy staff.
Right.
But...
You graduated the academy, right, Butch? So
I did.
Thoughts? I mean, I assume this is something you pay. It's your alma mater, you know?
Yeah, I just think it's they want to change direction. And not that I think Admiral David has been there for a year or so into a 3-year job. Though if the president disagreed with the policies there, most of them weren't hers as far as the DEI programs or books or whatever. It's something she inherited, but I think bringing a Marine in, he wants to change the flavor, change the message on training more to a strict military
kind of the Pete Hegseth warfighting emphasis.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And he's doing that, bringing in a former Special Forces guy to be the chairman. I think it's all in the same book.
I mean, whenever I have you guys on, I always kind of, my mind gravitates towards military-type topics, but I still keep thinking about the comments by the three-star that was at Eglin not that long ago, two-star, I forget which, basically saying that, we are preparing for war. We are in a 3 or 4 year envelope where we are anticipating, we hope not, we hope we can deter, but we don't really believe we can, that we are preparing for, kinetic action against China because of Taiwan, et cetera, I think we have to prepare that way. The only way to discourage it is to prepare for it, right?
Right.
Exactly.
And I guarantee you the Chinese are not worried about pronouns. We know that they are training. We know they're building their military.
and
you
islands.
You can't be soft and fuzzy.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, it's a, to me as an outsider, I look at this question of inclusivity within the military, and it was absolutely an emphasis under Biden. It was absolutely an emphasis under Obama. And I, you know, the things that I hear about what happens on the carriers and having these pride shows and all of this kind of stuff. And there is one part of me that thinks, well, you know, you've got the personnel you've got, and how can we make it the best culture where everybody is motivated as best they can? But you got to build the war. The war fighting culture is what it has to be. It's the not mission, it's not a happy club culture. It's a war fighting culture.
The mission is paramount.
Yeah.
And if it improves the mission, great. If it doesn't improve the mission,
and that needs to be
probably
the only test, right? That's the that should be the only test.
Right.
It's 8:45 on News Radio 92.3. We've got Butch and Lee Hansen here in studio with me. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by Knox Pest Control. Their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, you can visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. No accidents to report to you right now. I-10, I-110 are back flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Butch and Lee Hansen, my favorite retired, married to each other captains. I love you guys. You're
that's
the best.
That's a huge, huge category.
You're the one I know. Okay. So, Lee, I wanted to ask you, you are vice chair for now that they've kind of had a restructuring, and Cedric Alexander is your chair for
the Chappie James
Memorial Foundation.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Where do we stand? There's been a lot of sort of change in the last couple of months. So where do we stand?
Right. Where we stand is that we are going to be meeting with the city in early August to sit down and hammer out a new stewardship agreement.
Okay.
And once that's done, we move forward.
Okay.
And we're looking at it as an opportunity to make it fit.
Okay.
And honestly, everyone, county, city, state, seems to be
On board.
It's just we have to get it right.
And I know the last I recall, it was a partial expiration of the time frame where they had demanded to get the agreement, but also that that the old one was allowed to lapse, basically. But also they wanted your financials, right? They wanted to see where the money is, and I don't know if that's been produced yet or where we're at on that. But
well, the issue there was.
And by the way, Butch is, you're both numbers guys managers, but Butch used to be the budget analyst for the city of Pensacola City Council. So, you know, there's some knowledge in the
and
room.
And he is also on the Chappie James.
Oh, right.
Memorial
okay. Very
Foundation.
Good.
And so the county unanimously voted us a big piece of money, $685,000, mm-hmm. which may put us over the top. But it's hard to know because with all these delays, it's been almost 6 months since they voted us that money. But because of administrative issues, it hasn't. They haven't been able to disperse it to us until this agreement with the city gets hammered out. So, do we have enough money? I don't know. We don't have the money from the county, though they voted it mm-hmm. for us. So, we're kind of in a catch-22 there between the we might have the money or we might not. The city knows we can't say we have the money, because they wouldn't modify our agreement that the county wanted modified. So all these people that really want this project to happen, we hope we can sit down and figure it out, and maybe it'll happen.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, I'm with you. I think there's 100% of the people that I know love the idea.
Right. Mm.
It's just then the question of the details and the funding.
And what a great thing to have.
Absolutely.
A national hero from Pensacola, and to honor him and all the wonderful things that he did. So
It kind of annoys me a little bit that the Welcome Center, which is in Escambia County, they've got their plan on a stick. And, you know, Santa Rosa to the east has a plan on a stick. And, you know, why can't we have one?
Yeah. Well,
it doesn't even have to be a blue one. It can be a green one. You know, I'm fine
right,
with that.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to it. Switching gears a little bit, it seems like the big issue in the city this week, both of your city residents, was recycling. How'd recycling go for you, Lee?
Well, let's just say that I did get a recycling can, but I
will
tell you.
Oh, right, end of story. Good,
yeah,
next topic.
Right. So I knew that it was supposed to start, and we heard that it was supposed to start on the 14th mm-hmm. of July. And so I waited for my flyer, didn't get it. So
you got no flyer. Okay, so far. Okay.
Correct.
All right.
So I went on to the website. And I attempted to figure out how to apply for a recycling can. And the only thing I could figure out was that I had to basically say that I had an issue and I had to put in a complaint.
Weird.
That said that, I mean, maybe there was another way, but I couldn't find it.
Well, not to interrupt your story, but let me interrupt your story. I was talking with somebody the other day who said, I tried to sign up for a recycling can and could not get the mechanism to work, called the sanitation department. The sanitation department said, we'll do this. And she said, well, can we do it together? And the sanitation worker halfway through said, I can't get it to work either. So your story is not unique.
Okay. So I put in a complaint and I said that I wanted a recycling can. And then I got an email back that said, your issue has been resolved.
Sorry.
And I said,
not laughing at your pain, but you know.
Okay. And then we were actually out of town and our dog sitter said, hey, they just delivered a recycling can.
Okay,
what
so
do you
it
want
did
me to
come
do?
Eventually.
It did.
Okay.
But it didn't have any information about what day or
okay,
anything.
No
so
notice,
then I had to
right.
go back onto the website and figure out that it's going to come on Friday. And so I put it out this morning.
Oh, for what day your actual pickup is going to be. Okay. And did you get the bill that had the, I've seen pictures of this bill where it's kind of bottom quarter of the page where it says, you know, your one date pickup is coming this day.
Oh,
have you seen that?
I haven't seen that.
Okay. All right. Butch, it's also happening in your household. Any thoughts? I don't live in the city. All I can talk about is ECUA, which ECUA generally is quite good, yeah. But you know,
that's above my pay grade.
as a retired 06, I don't know what is exactly, yeah. But okay, fair enough.
We divide our responsibilities.
What the thing that I think, and again, as not a city resident, so I'm always reluctant to say this is what ought to be done. I know that ECUA has had various issues, okay, but it seems like if the county can run EMS, and if now the city residents are angry that they're paying more for half the service and recycling is this never-ending cluster, it seems like, even with the best of intentions, and I don't doubt DC's intentions
and
or the work.
And it's not the same recyclables as
right,
ECUA,
it's a different set of recyclables.
Even though it's going to the same place.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So why not just say, okay, we're out. ECUA, come and get it. Because you already have a District 4 ECUA representative.
Yep.
Who basically gets to do, well, I mean, they get to do water and sewer for the city, but they, you know, they don't do the recycling and the garbage and the yard waste.
So what you're saying is we should be more efficient?
It seems like, because the argument for city services is that they're better. You know, you pay extra $2 million and you get, theoretically, you get better fire, quicker response time for police. You know, you get things that are, you know, the roads get repaired faster, all that. And it seems like that argument in this particular application doesn't bear out.
Correct.
I agree. So, you know, you're getting back to my argument that we have four different elected groups here that all have their hand in your pocket.
Yeah.
And they don't coordinate with each other. And this is a prime case. I mean, sanitation is one of the four enterprises of the city. But now the director of sanitation is also the director of Pensacola Energy. So I miss that change in leadership, but there have been a lot of changes in leadership at the city.
Sure.
At different departments. So I'm not sure how, I guess the enterprise of sanitation is still operating separately, but they've certainly had some fits and starts here over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'm watching it at a distance, but everything I'm seeing at a distance is, you know, people are very, very frustrated, or they've tried and failed, or they're upset, or the bills, and just kind of, you know, at a certain point, there's really nothing you can do right. Even if you do it right, that's not what anybody remembers.
Correct.
You know. And then sometimes you stick your thumb in to try to fix the problem that may have been you have inherited, like DC has a lot of it.
Sure.
And well, all of a sudden, it's your problem that everybody blames you for.
Yeah,
you know,
the reality is though that, and this is where we. Internal to our house, disagree a little bit as far as recycling or not.
Oh, but, I'm excited. Tell me more.
But it's driven
I've been
by
waiting
the
for
market.
The moment. I've been waiting to.
It's
because I think it's neat to see married couples disagree, you know? So go on, conflict.
Lee
drive it, go
like
on.
To recycle everything. I'd like to recycle everything. But the market's not there anymore.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's what's driving all these problems. They've got people, a generation now, that are liquored up on recycle metal. Recycled glass.
They're all hopped up on the message. and we've been sold. But, we've been public schooled into believing. Yes.
But the But the problem is there's not a market for these things anymore. Right. And so I think your ECUA director said the other day that they don't make much money, and they even lose money.
Yeah, they spent $500 a truck to send, it was glass. To send glass away, because there's nobody building fiberglass here locally.
Because there's no market for it.
Right.
And even a lot of plastics, because the products, I have a friend in the aluminum business, but even aluminum cans, you can only use them for so many things because the alloys have gotten so pure. And you can't guarantee that when you're recycling stuff that's had paint or other coatings inside cans is fascinating thing. But it's just a reality of the market.
You know what it is, I think? Actually, let me take a quick break. We'll come back to this. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
No accidents to report to you right now. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
You know, we use the term kind of contemptuously, but virtue signaling. Right, is or performative virtue is the idea of I know I'm a good person because I do this, this, and this. And we all have parts of our lives where we're like this. I know I'm good because I tithe. I know I'm good because I attend church. I know I'm good because whatever. Okay, all the different things that we all you fill in the blank for your performative virtue. Right. Most people who recycle feel like they're being good people by recycling.
Right.
We feel like we're doing the right thing, we're treating the earth better, we're saving the planet, we're saving money, we're picking up our trash, we're being good people. And now you're telling me I can't be a good person in this way anymore, and my efforts to have tried to be a good person are actually costing money and making things worse. What the crap, man?
Yeah,
that's right. Right. And my EV's not saving the atmosphere.
Right. Yeah, my electric vehicle isn't helping. But that mess, I mean, that's important to people to feel good about themselves and their activities. They thought they had one, and now you're jeopardizing that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're telling them, you dumb Pharisee, it doesn't work that way, right? I mean, you know.
Exactly.
And that's painful for people to imagine.
I guess my
virtue signaling. But we have our can.
But what's that?
We have our can.
You do have your recycle bin for now anyway,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
All right. Let's see. What else I was going to ask you one other thing that I thought would be particularly interesting to you guys. The medical facility. This is a big news. At least in the sense that the eyesore is going to go away. Fingers crossed.
That's right. You'll have another one right behind.
Yeah, you get to see you get to see the storage tank right behind it.
Right.
Yeah. Which was its own bugaboo, I know, several years ago. But are you guys live in the area? Are you happy? What's your thought about this?
Well, we're happy something's happening. Unhappy that we haven't forced something to happen. The owners of this blighted building for the last 20 years that the city hasn't really done anything. I mean,
and there
ECU
have been code enforcement signs out there for years.
But now we're going to pay $1.2 million for the land and the building that just has to be, it's going to probably cost another couple million to tear it down. That's why nobody else has renovated it or done anything.
Yeah.
That this the company we're buying it from bought it from the ECUA for $75,000, apparently.
Which seems like, to me, you know, what was ECUA doing there? I don't know. That doesn't make any sense.
They wanted it for the, they had
for
to buy the land for the tank.
Oh, right. No, I mean, I get what they were trying to accomplish, but the price tag is insane, you know, which they paid $600 and then sold for $70, you know, just crazy.
But I'm always concerned when government gets involved with being a real estate broker because they just don't have that skill set.
Well, thank God around here we don't do that.
Yeah.
See,
okay.
Bruce, the worries you have only apply to other places in other states because surely in Escambia County and the city of Pensacola, we never get involved in real estate speculation or management or leaseholding.
Right? Yeah, OLF8, that's worked out well.
The Tech Park, Community Maritime Park, and now we've got the motel, you know, the good intentions.
Right. But when you have a business built on subsidies, it's a pretty weak business or your tax structure is wrong. Just ask Elon Musk.
Yeah. And I mean, his whole business model is vulnerable to if the government decides it's going to take away the money. It's hard to turn a profit. Yeah. How to privatize something like that when, you know, you can put the covenants, the restrictions on it, but if the city can't make the thing work, why would a private company be able to make it work?
Exactly. Right.
With the
and
motor
they didn't
lodge.
Buy it before.
Right, because they didn't see the potential in it before.
Right.
And again, good intentions, but should government be in the landlord business?
No. Butch they should be looking to divest.
Butch and Lee Hansen, as always, thanks you guys. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Local Talk in the Morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3 WNR.